Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 137, recorded Thursday, January 25th, 2018. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: tips for 2018 travel status and how to shop for a suitcase. So coming to you again from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, Illinois, this episode is sponsored by TravelPerk, the number one rated business travel tool on the internet. So hey, it's been a light travel month, just a drive down to Nashville, a couple trips over to Charlottesville, Virginia for me, which has really been a nice break from what has, at least Charlottesville, has been a nice break for what's been otherwise turning out to be really, really a brutally cold winter in Chicago. The day after New Year's, I walked out of the house into a minus 10 degrees Fahrenheit morning. Now, that's not wind chill. It was minus 10 degrees ambient. Welcome to January. I ended up having my team travel here to Chicago about a week or 2 weeks ago for a 2018 kickoff meeting. I got to tell you, nobody accused us of boondoggling. The guy from Phoenix did say he was filing an employee abuse claim, though. I got to tell you, I've found myself drinking a lot less craft beer and a lot more scotch whiskey this month. Minus 10 degrees is definitely brown liquor weather. Luckily, my daughter brought home a nice bottle of 18-year-old Glen Scotia from Edinburgh for Christmas. I've got to tell you, I've made a sizable dent in it in the now 25 days. On my first trip to Charlottesville, after being off the road for what was about 4 weeks, I got to tell you, it took me forever to gather up all my bits, all the bits of my regular travel carry from various places around the house. Normally, my travel carry stays in my backpack and in my suitcase. Actually, I buy duplicates of things like hairbrushes and toothbrushes and toothpaste and headphones, just so I don't need to pull them out of my bag. But for some reason, I don't know, over those 4 weeks at home, just all discipline just broke down, went to hell. And my carefully curated sort of travel carry was just spread, I don't know, it was more like spewed throughout the house. Luckily, my ride to O'Hare was 5 minutes late, so I had time to like run around. I took my Blue Smart bag on this last trip to Charlottesville, squeezing in one last trip before Americans' January 15th smart luggage bag took effect. I tweeted a picture of my Blue Smart before boarding, and an American replied, "Oh, we're glad you're flying with us and appreciate your cooperation with our team." My response was, not that I got that much of a choice, especially with the IATA, the big International Airline Trade Association. They're recommending the ban to its 300 airline members. Luckily, my new non-smart Victoria Knox bag arrived on my front porch before the ban clicked in. So once I shift everything from the Blue Smart to the Victoria Knox, I'll power down the Blue Smart, delete its app from my iPhone, and consign it up to the corner of the attic with all my other retired bags, kind of my land of misbegotten bags. So following up, starting off the new year, I did a blog post summarizing some of the high and low points that we talked about in 2017. The high points, things like Uber and Lyft driver stories, yet more craft beer tap rooms and Hertz's President Circle aisle. The low points, airlines dragging passengers from planes, everybody lobbying for 5-star reviews, and, kind of no surprise, this smart luggage ban. Alan Marco, he's not just a longtime Travel Commons listener, but probably one of the original Travel Commons listener. And he showed his roots by posting on the original comment channel, that is the Travel Commons website. Alan said, have had our away luggage for only about 6 months prior to the battery ban. I really like the smart charging feature. Luckily, the away battery is a nicely designed, self-contained, and easily removable unit. Two screws, screwdriver included. Now the battery lives in my backpack and the luggage is still usable. Well, I got to tell you, Alan's psychic capabilities are showing there. I think Away is the only smart bag that meets the airline's requirements for a removable battery. But for me, you know, charging wasn't really the major use case for me. I mean, I'm typically fine with my Anker lipstick charger. And if I forget to charge that, my Verizon mobile Wi-Fi hotspot also doubles as a charger. For me, the GPS tracking was the main use case. For those times I had to check a bag, it was nice to know that it had also made it to my destination, a use case that requires power. So pull the battery out, no more tracking. Oh, well, yeah, it was fun while it lasted. Jim McDonough replied to the Twitter announcement of the last episode where I wondered if I was the last generation of cash payers. Jim wrote, I use cash, A, at the local farmer's market, B, to pay for haircuts, having a hard time coming up with C. Okay, Jim, I don't know. You know, looking at your Twitter profile picture, you look like you could land in my generation. I tell you, I apologize for using a credit card for anything under $20, although I do have to say that more and more microbrewery tap rooms only take credit cards. I don't apologize there, nor do I apologize at the self-service tills at Home Depot or Tesco, mostly because there's no one there to apologize, even though they will still take cash. Natalie on the British Airways social media team tweeted back at me about the other topic on the last episode, about how hard it can be to cash in on loyalty points. You'll remember that I talked about all the hassles I had from transferring Avios points from BA to Iberia until I got a British Airways agent with really a solid Northern English accent. Natalie of BA said, hey, Mark, thanks for tagging us in your article. I am glad to hear that one of our Geordie colleagues was able to help you redeem some of your Avios. It's a shame you didn't catch her name, though. I got to agree, Natalie. It was absolutely a shame. She was great. She performed magic. She deserved huge props, and I'm just sorry I couldn't give them to her. In that same riff on that podcast, that last episode, I mentioned how my email to Iberia to clean up my name on my Iberia Plus account, which might have been the root cause for all my point transfer problems. Well, that email request seemed to have just fallen into a black hole. I mentioned that in the last episode. Well, apparently it didn't. Soon after that episode, I got a letter from Iberia with a new card that had my correct name. I mean, it didn't fall into a black hole. It got action. That was really nice. Would have been, I don't know, just a bit nicer if when they got the email, they had hit the reply button and typed, you know, I don't know, just 8 words, something like got it fixed, new card in the mail. But hey, it got done. All of it. The Avios points, the nonstop O'Hare to Madrid flight on points, and now a card with my correct name. And I got to tell you that Iberia letter was probably one of the last surprises I got when I opened the mailbox at home. I don't know quite how, I signed up for a U.S. Post Office service that sends me an email every morning with scanned images of the letters that I'm going to receive that day. When I got the first email, I was kind of like, what the hell is this? But I don't know. Now I kind of like it, especially when I'm on the road. No more wondering sort of which bills showed up or during the holidays who had sent us Christmas cards. It does kind of take the surprise out of opening the mailbox. But, you know, there really wasn't that much surprise left, given that, you know, sort of 90% of the remaining physical mail is junk. But hey, it's kind of entertaining getting an email every day. Back in August, in episode 132, to be exact, where I was talking about travel apps that I've got loaded on my iPhone, I talked about using the paid or the pro version of TripIt and about how, you know, it was kind of on the bubble for me because of how the airlines have improved the flight status notifications in their own apps. And sort of in the 4 months since, the airline apps have been pretty consistent about notifying me of gate gate changes and delays faster than TripIt Pro. And so when my subscription ran out a few weeks ago, I've just sort of ignored the renewal alerts. I'll still keep the free version. I like the way TripIt consolidates separate plane, hotel, and rent-a-car reservations into a single trip or a single itinerary, kind of like replicating the itineraries that your travel agent used to give you when they booked your entire flight before they got disintermediated by the internet. But I don't know, paying $50 for what is now slower, redundant flight alerts? I don't know. It seems $50 that I could spend on beer or brown liquor instead. I don't know if it's just me, but the cadence for airlines for their boarding groups, it's just gotten completely out of control. I think I was on a Delta flight. When I was in boarding group, I don't know, I think one or two, but I was like the fourth or fifth group to board after Delta One, and then Platinum Medallion, then Gold Medallion, then SkyTeam Elite. It went on forever. Now, American's a bit better. Only one non-numeric boarding group for the sort of invite-only, you know, double-secret concierge key gang. I mean, if you remember George Clooney in the Up in the Air movie, he really got jazzed by making, I think, concierge key. And then American's got sort of after that pre-board, then they've got like boarding groups 1 through 9. I mean, I do love the announcement too that they make. If you don't have a boarding group number, then board group 7, which I don't know, that feels kind of random. Like, why not 8? And I guess 9 is saved for the basic economy folks, so you're absolutely truly at the back of the plane. You know, where it really comes in fun, though, this cadence is on a regional jet, when the gate agent runs through this entire cadence for a plane that only has, I don't know, 40 to 50 passengers, and all the carry-on bags are gate... Well, I guess they call it valet checked. Now boarding passengers in group 1, 2, group 3, 4 people board, groups 5, 6, 7, and the rest of you. And then, you know, followed by just this general scrum of people in front of the agent. Look, I know airlines employ PhDs in psychology, sociology, and linear programming to work on this stuff, but I just boarding continues to be a cluster. And hey, if you've got any thoughts, questions, a story, a comment, travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send it along. The email address is comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. You can use your smartphone to record and send in an audio comment. Send a Twitter message to M. Peacock. You can always post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page. Or, like Alan, go old school, post your thoughts on the website at travelcommons.com. And hey, thanks to this episode's sponsor, Travel Perk. Now, you'll remember back in the November episode, I talked about American Airlines' last-minute cancellation of my night flight to Charlottesville, and then my ensuing scramble to find a replacement flight and to make sure that the Hyatt place didn't flush my reservation. But if I'd booked with Travel Perk, they would have done the scrambling for me. This all-in-one business travel management tool includes a team of highly qualified agents ready to rescue disgruntled travelers from any scenario 24/7. It's because of making magic happen in times like this that Travel Perk is now the number one rated business travel tool on the internet. You'll love them, because you can finally take control of your travel schedule, have freedom to book alternative accommodations like Airbnb, and have a built-in rescue team when stuff goes south. Remove some of the stress from the equation. Go to go.travelperk.com/travelcommons for a no-commitment test drive. It's free forever. That's forever. If you go to go.travelperk.com/travelcommons. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, plan for 2018 travel perks. So here we are, we're 4 weeks into the new year, and anywhere from, I don't know, a third to a half of us have already ditched our New Year's resolutions and are now in full anticipation of sort of Super Bowl queso dip. Forget the weight, we've given it up, we're moving on down the road. But while your dry January may have sort of washed out early, you still have time to get your 2018 travel perks in place. Almost all perks come from status in loyalty programs, and all those status earning counts reset on January 1st. So the first step is to match up what you think your 2018 travel plans will be to your loyalty programs. Now, any gaps? I don't know. I mean, if you think you're going to start flying to Seattle, I don't know, maybe helping to shill your hometown for Amazon's HQ2, look, you're probably going to want to sign up for Alaskan Airlines mileage plan, whereas before, it probably just wasn't worth the extra junk mail. Or if you're already a member, do a status match. When I took a new CIO gig some years back, all the hotels near what were going to be my new offices were Hilton brands. Now, I had a Hilton Honors card, but it was just sort of the basic blue as opposed to my sort of top-of-the-line sparkly platinum Marriott card. After I hit the reset my password link on the Hilton website, it had been that long since I'd actually done anything with Hilton. I went straight to their status match page. Right at the top, it says, for the next 90 days, we'll match your elite status with any other loyalty program. And then if you complete 4 or 8 stays over those next 90 days, depending on your status match, the match is good for the year. So rather than having to grind my way to Hilton status, I started enjoying it on day one. Actually, I had a friend do that same thing with American. He parlayed his United 1K status to Executive Platinum when he moved from Denver to Dallas. You know, much better than slumming in that boarding group 5 until you clear the first status bar. Now, doing this, you also need to keep in mind the different ecosystems, the partnerships that tie travel companies together. It used to be just international alliances, Star Alliance, SkyTeam, Oneworld. When I knew, this was a while back, when I knew that I'd be traveling down to South Africa racking up some really serious business class mileage, it's a 17-hour trip from the U.S. to Joburg. I had two real options, either South African Airways out of JFK or Washington Dulles, or Delta out of Atlanta. Now, living in Chicago, I chose South Africa Airways because they're part of Star Alliance with United. And I figured I'd get a lot more use from United status living in Chicago than I was going to with Delta status. And actually, now it's getting even more combinatorial. For example, United and Marriott are now status matching each other. So if you've got Marriott status, boom, you can get United status and vice versa. I happen to have both, so it's not that big of a deal for me. But if you can double down on one, you get the other. It's like a BOGO, right? Buy one, get one free. And then, of course, there are the credit cards, both the Affinity cards, kind of, you know, the United, Chase Visa, the American Airlines Citi MasterCard. And then there's the regular sort of non-Affinity ones. So Amex Platinum, the Chase Sapphire Reserve, which is kind of the new hotness. At the end of the day, you got to do the math to see what makes sense. So, for example, Amex's Platinum card is, it costs $550 a year. But with that, you get certainly membership rewards points that can transfer to airlines or hotels. You get access to Delta lounges and, more importantly to me, Amex's Centurion lounges, which if you travel frequently to Dallas, Vegas, Miami, and either LaGuardia and now JFK in New York, it's those lounges are just phenomenal. They're much better than, say, American or United's lounges. I just wish they had one in Chicago. And then Amex also picks up the $100 fee for global entry or $85 for a pre-check. They give you 10 go-go Wi-Fi sessions, $200 in Uber credit, and there's some other benefits along the way. Now, if you use these benefits, and if you can really logically use them all, then, hey, you know, $550, even though it's a bigger number, can be a better deal than, say, I don't know, the $95 that the United Chase card will cost you. Now, you know, that Chase card, though, you know, if you're a big United flyer or kind of a not a big United Flyer, but kind of a semi-United Flyer, and you don't necessarily aren't going to quite hit those status levels, that Chase card will give you sort of baggage fee waiver, two United Club passes, and status boarding. So if you don't travel a huge amount on United and you live in a United hub like Houston, well, that United card actually could be a better deal for you. But again, you got to think about your travel. You got to do the math, and then you got to sign up for it now so you've got all year to maximize the status benefits. And I got to tell you, and I'll always tell you this, while you're in the planning zone, do yourself a huge favor and sign up, make an appointment for Global Entry if you do international travel, or pre-check if you're just doing domestic flying. And hey, if it makes sense for you to get an Amex Platinum or a Chase Sapphire Reserve, it'll be free. So to me, TSA and customs lines are still the worst part of travel. And while you're figuring out how to bump up your status so you can get out of the lines for airlines and hotels, do yourself a favor and step out of those TSA and customs lines too. Second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, how to shop for a suitcase. Okay, look, perhaps it's a bit presumptuous of a title. Perhaps the better title would have been how I shopped for a suitcase. But before we go there, let's summarize the setup from the past episodes. So my 10-year-old black Swiss Army carry-on rendered itself unusable before Thanksgiving when the handle became stuck in, of course, the extended position. Luckily, this was as I was getting into a car coming home from O'Hare and not while I was trying to stow the bag in the overhead while boarding. And then, you know, next thing that we've said is I hate shopping for suitcases. So after this happened, I recharged my BlueSmart smart bag and put it back into service in December, only then to have it banned from air travel as of last week. So that's how we got here. So now I am forced to shop for a suitcase. Now, like any good consultant, I, of course, construct a prioritized list of evaluation criteria to guide my purchase. I am that dull. First and foremost, obviously, it's got to be a carry-on. Now, this may seem to be a bit of a duh. I can't believe you're actually listing this. But there is a little bit of ambiguity here. The approved height for a carry-on bag varies by airline somewhere between, it's in the range of 19 to 22 inches. So if I wanted to play it safe, I'd go with, say, the 20-inch bag. But I also want to maximize how much I'm carrying on, how much I can carry on. And I end up tilting toward choosing that space because really, I mean, most of the U.S. carriers, I think all the U.S. carriers will accept a 22-inch bag. And given that that's mostly what I fly, and then even when I'm on European carriers, I usually have enough alliance status, you know, say my American Platinum status carries over to Oneworld and my United status carries over to Star Alliance. So I've usually got enough alliance status to get into a pre-board situation or one of the first status boarding groups, which usually lets me sort of slide past the baggage carrier. So I went for the 22-inch bag, which kind of, you know, sliding past the baggage sizer leads to the second criteria, which is the bag needs to be black. As I said in my Ruthless Packing Tips post back in October, black not only makes you look thinner, it makes your bag look thinner to gate agents scanning for bag sizer bait. Third criteria, look, it's got to be two wheels and not four. Now, this is a bit more of a personal preference. My BlueSmart is a four-wheel spinner, and my wife's Samsonite is a spinner, and she swears by it. But here's the thing. Because the four wheels have to extend from the bottom of the bag to be able to spin, spinners sacrifice packing space for agility. That's just the trade-off. While two-wheelers can sort of embed their two wheels back up into the back plane of the bag, and so they don't extend out. So again, trying to maximize packing space, I go for the two-wheeler. And then what I do is I look for the biggest wheels that I can find, which is going to make it an easier, smoother pull. I got to tell you, I was kind of surprised at how much this limited my selection. Spinners definitely are the rule nowadays. My fourth criterion, I wanted the inside of the suitcase to be as plain and as empty as possible. Look, I don't want a bunch of zip compartments. I don't want built-in suit hangers or sort of ratcheting down clothes dividers. I just want a wide open box that I can, you know, structure as I see fit for the needs of each, you know, particular trip. And usually how I do this is with clothes and shoes and stuff like that. But if you've got, if you've got what the suitcase manufacturer thinks is the optimal selection of storage, you're stuck with it. So I was surprised at how tough this was to find. Indeed, in the end, I couldn't find it, and so I ended up settling for a bag where I could detach the suit hanger and the clothes divider and just end up stashing all that stuff up in the land of misbegotten bags next to the Blue Smart. So woodland through all that, I ended up actually buying a black Victorinox Works Traveler 5.0. There's a mouthful. A two-wheeler. Victorinox is what used to be Swiss Army, and I figured if my last bag survived 10 years of hard mileage, that had to say something for their durability. It was also one of the few where I could, like I said, detach all the internal storage stuff, and it has that additional zipper to expand the width by, I don't know, kind of, you know, by like an inch. It's kind of like when you drop a notch on your belt after a Thanksgiving or Christmas dinner. And for those times, and it'll come in handy for those times when I'm flying home and bought a few too many bottles of wine or brown liquor. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 137. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. Check out the show notes for article links and music links. Thanks again to Travel Perk for sponsoring this episode. Remember to go to go.travelperk.com/travelcommons for a test drive. You'll find a link to that in the show notes. You can always find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes. But of course, you already know that because you're listening here. So tell your friends, family, colleagues, dog walker, whoever, where they can find Travel Commons. Hey, and if you've got a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send it along. Text or audio file, comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, mpeacock at Twitter. Write them on the Facebook page, Travel Commons, or post them to the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everybody in this episode, Alan and Jim McDonough. But thanks to everyone who's taken the time to send in emails, tweets, post comments on the website. I really appreciate it. And until we talk again, thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Travel safe. Bye now.